Okay, let's take your phone calls, questions, stories as we talk about lucid dreaming and all kinds of dreams. Robert Wagoner with us, and we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. We're here with Robert Wagoner as we talk about lucid dreaming and all kinds of dreams, as a matter of fact. What about shared dreams, Robert? Have you heard of that?
Yes. In my first book, I have a chapter on mutual lucid dreams, where a lucid dreamer finds another dreamer, or where, on occasion, two lucid dreamers encounter each other. It's a fascinating area.
And by doing that, by sharing dreams, how does that work?
So there seems to be some function that allows people to meet in the dream state. And the way that you can verify this for your own self is, again, to pass on information from one person to the other. And then in the morning, you can verify whether you picked it up correctly. So it seems like there's an dreams on occasion show us this kind of alternate dimension where people meet in a non-physical way.
Let's take some calls here for you. Let's go to Marilyn in Redding, California. She's got a question for you. Hi, Marilyn. Go ahead.
Hello there. You're such an excitement. I'm staying up for this show.
Perfect.
But after I heard you once before saying you must try to remember your dreams, put that in your mind when you went to bed. And I did. And after I heard that, I had like an out-of-body experience. My husband of 49 years came to me and took me in a flight. It was like I went up in the sky, and mm-hmm. we took our umbrella cockatoo with us. My husband, who passed away 10 years ago, had a beautiful silver cape on. I remember his cape flying in the wind, and it was like it had wings going out on it. And his cape was almost silver sequined, and I was flying behind him, and our bird was flying between us. And we absolutely went flying in the sky. The night before I had this experience, I saw an eagle flying over the roof across the street. And I thought, oh, how beautiful. And that night, this dream happened. I don't know if they're connected or not, but that's the only time I've seen that eagle.
Robert, what do you think of those signs?
You know, I think it's a beautiful synchronicity to have that experience of seeing the eagle and then also in the dream state meeting your deceased husband, who then takes you all on a flight, including your pet. So I think it's a wonderful story, and that's oftentimes what you see when you see deceased interact with dreamers. They want to take them on a voyage. They want to show them that they're doing okay, and it sounds by the fact that he's wearing a silver cape that he's doing just fine. So I'm really happy, Marilyn, that you've had this profound dream experience.
Do you think those from the other side sometimes, Robert, come back in order to kind of calm us down?
Exactly. I think that's one of the primary purposes is to tell us not to lose faith, that there's something more than just this physical experience, that in many respects we are a spiritual being having a physical being who will someday realize our true self, which is fundamentally a psychological spiritual self. So I think they come back to kind of remind us of that and to tell us not to give up, not to lose heart.
Marilyn, thank you. Let's go next to David in Kelowna, Canada. Welcome to the program. Hi, David. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
My lucid dreaming has been very limited. What I find is I encounter some major threat, like a bully or a monster or something like that. I realize I'm dreaming. I pick up a stick and wail the crap out of it, but the moment I realize I'm dreaming, the monster or the threat stops and just stands there and takes it. So I can't seem to get beyond that. My question is that about 15 years ago, I hid something that was very valuable. I was under threat that it was going to be stolen. And I forgot where I hid it. And I'm wondering if through lucid dreaming I could remember where I hit it.
That's conceivable. What do you think, Robert?
You know, I think that there's definitely a possibility there. But I want to tell you something, David. You're probably going to have to deal with this recurring threat that's appeared in your earlier lucid dreams before you get to that place where you're able to have the presence of mind to recall or have shown to you where that lost item might be.
Why is that, Robert?
Oftentimes our larger awareness is trying to bring to us the issue that we most need to resolve. It once it resolves so that we can grow up and become our whole self, our whole being. And while our ego self might be interested in other things, that's what your larger awareness is thinking about. So for example, if I became lucidly aware, I remember one time I did become lucidly aware, and there was an angry Rottweiler just snarling at me with its teeth bared, and I thought it was going to attack me. But I thought, well, wait a second, this is a dream. And so then here's what I did. I sent it what it was lacking. So I sent it love and compassion and acceptance and understanding. And suddenly that Rottweiler began to shrink, and it became a dachshund like I had when I was a little kid. And then I bent down and picked it up, and we went flying together. So I want to tell you that's what you can do, David, with this angry, threatening figure that appears in your lucid dreams. Send it love and compassion, and you'll watch it change. Or you can do something even more profound. Ask it an open-ended question, like, what do you represent, or who are you? And oftentimes, it'll explain exactly what it represents and resolve the mystery. But I think once you get that mystery resolved, then you can use lucid dreaming to find a forgotten item. And I have noticed in our magazine, occasionally, someone will respond with a lucid dream where they did find something that they had lost or thought was lost.
What, when these things are happening, what creates the nightmare, for example?
You know, I think really the nightmare is our larger awareness trying to get us to resolve some fear or concern that we have. And so the nightmare might happen every 3 months or whatever, but again, it's waiting for a new creative response, and then we can resolve it. When I was a little kid, I had a nightmare of the Invisible Man. The Invisible Man was in the house, and at first, when I had the nightmares, it really wasn't much of a nightmare. It was just kind of cool. Oh, the Invisible Man is here. How do I know? Well, he's invisible. But finally, it became kind of a little bit of a nightmarish thing until I figured out a solution, which was to put a paint can right above the door where I thought it was going to be coming out of, and then the paint can would fall on it and would reveal the identity of the Invisible Man as the paint splattered him. And after I had that dream recognition, realization, then I never had that nightmare again. So oftentimes, nightmares are coming to us. They're issues that we're trying to resolve. They're frustrating. Sometimes they have a little bit of fear and concern in them. But our larger awareness is really trying to get them resolved so that we can become our more whole self.
All right. Next up, let's go to Barry in Rock Hills, South Carolina. Hello there, Barry.
Hello there, George. How are you, buddy?
I am well.
I tell you what, Thomas, I am loving hearing you on the show tonight. And, George, you know what I've told Tommy. Anytime, you just have the greatest guest, buddy. You got your pick of the best.
We do. And his name's Robert, though, not Thomas.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm thinking about Thomas in La Jolla.
Why?
Because he always asks and gives the most intelligent comments.
Yes, he does. He's a sharp guy.
He is dynamite. But listen, I have lucid dreams, George, and I can remember bits and pieces of the dream. Some of them are good. Some of them are frightening. But when I try to remember the entire dream the next morning, I can't get anything but bits and pieces. What's going on?
Yeah, Barry, that's something that I think all of us have to work on, because what we find is that if we don't remember that dream, like within the first 30 seconds or so, there's a good chance it's just going to evaporate and disappear. And so that's why I tell everyone who comes to my workshops, the first thing you have to think about when you wake up is, what was I just dreaming? And then you got to clearly recall it in your mind. And I'd suggest that they either make notes in a notepad, in a dream journal, or make audio notes or something to keep that dream fresh in their mind. Because when we wake up, we shift to a different neurological system. And I think sometimes in that shift to that waking system, it just makes it easier for the dream memories to disappear.
Well, I think so too. Robert, let's take a couple more calls, then we'll have a break, then we'll come back with final calls indeed. Now, you give workshops all over the place, don't you?
Yeah. I'm going to be out in Los Angeles giving a workshop. I do online workshops. I was in Taiwan a month ago. I spent 2 weeks out there giving workshops, so I go all around the world giving workshops.
Good for you. Barry, thanks. Let's go next to Gig Harbor, Washington. Lottie's with us, west of the Rockies. Hi there.
Hi.
Good to have you with us.
I was listening to your show. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Now, I have had dreams my whole life that end up happening later that are almost sometimes a sense of deja vu moment. Can lucid dreaming cause things like that? Is that, and then how often do dreams like those happen where something will happen in a dream and then later on it happens?
Yeah, so that's one of these things that sometimes in the dream state we might actually be rehearsing what we're going to experience in the coming day. And so in a sense they seem precognitive, but in fact it's kind of a rehearsal that we're experiencing, and then we go out and have the actual experience and sometimes have that sense of deja vu. But in other cases, we have experiences that can't be explained in that way, that there's just no way that we could have expected that unexpected element. So lucid dreaming doesn't cause precognitive experiences or precognitive dreams. Sometimes in a lucid dream, you can seek out precognitive information and then later wake up and see if it gets verified. In fact, I've heard from three or four lucid dreamers who have actually won the lottery by
really dreaming the numbers, huh?
They dreamt the numbers. So deja vu happens. Oftentimes, it's probably a dream experience, and it might be elements of a precognitive dream experience. But those deja vu moments in lucid dreaming really aren't connected.
How important, Robert, is that gut feeling we have as well as the dream?
You know, that gut feeling, that intuition, these are the things that Carl Jung said were our unconscious mind trying to reach our level of conscious awareness and kind of give us some direction. And so if we think of all dreams, as Jeremy Taylor used to say, coming in the way of health and wholeness, we realize that intuitions and dreams are really there to help us and really to give us kind of guidance and insight as we move forward.
We've got a first-time caller, Vincent, in Oklahoma. Welcome to the program, Vincent.
Hi, George. Hi, Robert. Thank you for having me.
Sure. Thank you.
I have a theory, and then I have a question.
All right.
I believe that our dreams are memories from our past lives. And we don't, you know, we wake up, we don't remember the dream, but I believe that was part of our past life memories. My question is, do you believe that
go ahead.
The woman just said deja vu are recurrent memories from our past lives.
You know, Vincent, that's a really interesting idea, because there are some dreams where the dream symbolism is so out of our normal world that you wonder, how am I learning something about ancient Japan? You know, if you grew up in the middle of the Midwest, like you and I have, you know, how would you know something like that? For example, one night I had a dream that this Japanese gentleman showed up, and he took these black pebbles and he threw them on a table in front of me. And then he looked at them and said, "Your life is almost half over now, but I see no major health problems." And he started to laugh, and then I woke up. And so I began to wonder, is that some sort of past life memory coming through. Finally, I found a young woman who was descended from a long line of Zen priests. And when I told her this experience, she said, oh, that's an ancient Shinto practice, only practiced in northern Japan now in rural villages. How did you know about that? And I said, well, it occurred to me in a dream. So I think that's one reason why sometimes dream symbols are very perplexing, is that some of the symbolism gets filtered through what you might call past life memories or those kind of things. I don't think that explains every dream. I mean, a lot of dreams are dealing with the here and now and our problems at work or problems in the family or whatever. But some of the bigger dreams, I do think, have that component.
Oh, I think so, too. Robert Wagoner with us, of course. We're taking your calls on dreams. Let's go to Joe in Long Island, New York. Hey, Joe, go ahead.
Yeah, Robert, I was interested in the idea of dreams morphing, where, you know, to your surprise, like I had a dream where I was in a lounge and the people, I wasn't really paying attention to the people, and I realized they were different than I would normally expect, and I kind of slowly headed for the exit. But the scene morphed on me. And my second question would just be about Jonah resting and that story and his journey and the provision of that giant plant, the idea of getting a provision while you're resting or just about sleeping out of, you know, that's miraculous or supernatural.
Yeah. So you're right. A lot of times in normal dreams, things morph. We're in a car, it becomes a motorcycle. We're in a lounge, then we're in our second grade classroom.
A bug becomes a monster.
Exactly. And the beautiful thing about lucid dreaming, though, is oftentimes we can see that as our mind changes, as our thinking changes, then suddenly the dream responds to that. And that's something that you normally don't see in a normal dream. You don't realize how your mind, your thinking is occurring, and then the scene changes in response to what you're thinking. So that's one of the beautiful things about lucid dreaming. It shows how that happens. But you're right. The dreams and lucid dreams, you know, sometimes give us kind of miraculous insights that we wouldn't have otherwise. And sometimes we receive aid from our larger awareness or from that intuitive self, and that leads to surprising results. So it just shows us that there's something beyond the ego, that we're connected to something much, much larger.
Do universities teach about dreams, Robert?
You know, occasionally I've talked at about a dozen or more universities and on lucid dreaming. And so where it's happening now, where you hear most talk about dreaming, is in classes on consciousness studies. So how can you understand consciousness without having some respect for the unconscious mind? And in a lucid dream, we can explore the unconscious mind and see kind of the basis, the foundation on which consciousness rests.
Good point. We're going to come back, Robert, in just a moment and take final phone calls for you as we talk about dreams, lucid dreams, and all that next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, Robert Wagoner with us. Robert, it's not quite a dream, but what do you call it when before you go to sleep, you concentrate on something, a person, a job, to make these things happen, and then you go to sleep? What is that?
You know, oftentimes that's what we call an incubation method. If we have a question or an issue that we need a response about or some clarification on, we can incubate it by focusing on it before we go to sleep, and then oftentimes we'll dream up a creative solution to the issue, whatever it might be.
But it works.
It works. There's even a study of math students. They gave them a creative problem, a problem that required a creative solution, a difficult math problem. And so one group, they let them go to sleep and come back in 8 hours and solve the problem. And then the other group, they gave it to them in the morning and told them to come back to the classroom in 8 hours and try to solve the problem. The group that was allowed to sleep, I believe 60% of that group solved the problem. They came up with the creative solution. But the group that stayed awake, only 20% of that group solved the difficult math problem because it required a creative solution, one that you normally couldn't figure out rationally. It required a super creative solution. And so that's why it's a good idea to sleep on it. If you have a big issue that you got to deal with, you're much better off just sleeping on it and allowing the creativity of your unconscious mind to help you see your way through it.
Do you think some people who die in their sleep may have been frightened to death in a dream?
Boy, that's a good one to wonder about, because we know that a lot of times in the dream state, those are some of the most emotional experiences that we have, are events that occur in the dream. But boy, I just wonder, maybe some of them realize that it's their time to go. And they see that this is their chance, and they make a go of it. But yeah, that's a wonderful question.
All right, let's go back to the calls. Let's go to Huck in Wisconsin. Welcome to the show. Hi there, Huck.
Hey, George. Been quite a while. So thank you for this wonderful show.
Thank you.
Robert, thank you for your work and what you do. Awesome topic. I love this. My question is, you said something earlier, and it just brought me to this question, and I'm curious if lucid dreaming might be the entranceway to the Hall of Records.
Well, that's an interesting take. What do you think, Robert? The Akashic records, your own personal records that are supposed to be out there.
Right, right. You know, I think lucid dreaming is a way to directly access the deeper aspects of the unconscious. And Carl Jung might have called it the collective unconscious. People who are spiritually or mystically inclined might call it the Akashic Records or the Hall of Records. So I've seen people in lucid dreams that have given me their stories of finding out incredible information. And that's one of the beautiful things, just like the young woman who wanted to become an electron. In a lucid dream, when you ask to experience a concept or see something, it's truly profound. Like a young man wrote to my magazine, he had been watching a TV show about animal migration and some of the issues about, like, why do turtles migrate so far to lay eggs? They swim like
they're smart.
1,500 miles. Why do they do that? And so that night, he became lucidly aware, and then he wondered, why do turtles migrate so far? And suddenly, this is what he saw. It was like he was 100 miles above the earth, and he looked down, and he sees this little turtle swim across the bay to lay its eggs. And then as he watches this one continent begins to break up, and now that little turtle, instead of swimming, 20, 30 miles, has to swim 200 miles. And then the continents begin to break up further, and now this poor turtle has to swim 1,000 miles to get to its kind of original nesting grounds. And so when you see that occur in a lucid dream, you wake up and you wonder, did I just see, 200 million years of time occur on the planet Earth? And that's why turtles migrate like they do? So I think Hawk has a great question. I think lucid dreaming is a way to access that deeper information, not only about ourselves, but about the planet.
Could lucid dreaming also be used, though, for people who have the, a Walter Mitty complex and they want to be able to do all kinds of things? Maybe they want to be a great quarterback in a football game. And so they lucid dream that and realize they're in the dream.
Yeah, that's a great one. There's a wonderful guy in Germany who was getting a master's degree in sports science. And he was a gymnast, but to get his master's degree, he had to take some classes in swimming, and the swimming professor said that he swam like a rock. He was just a horrible swimmer. But this young guy, what he started to do, he is such a good lucid dreamer. In his lucid dreams, he would practice his swimming stroke, and sometimes in his lucid dreams, he would turn the entire swimming pool into gummy bears or honey or yogurt, and he would swim through it. And suddenly he began to swim much, much better than he ever had before, just because he was practicing in his lucid dreams. And finally, even the professor was amazed at how much he'd achieved. So So the great thing about Walter Mitty, you know, it's all in his mind and kind of stays there. But the beautiful thing in a lucid dream, it's all in your mind, but it gets transferred into your physical waking life.
Let's go to Portland, Oregon. Ed's with us now. Welcome to the show, Eddie. Go ahead.
How you doing, George? How you doing, Roger?
Okay.
When I was younger, I used to have a dream where I would go to this place. I'd look to the left. There was a cliff overlooking the ocean. I'd look to the right. There was this gigantic weeping willow tree. Down the middle was a path that led to a park. And I loved this dream. Every time I'd show up there, I was so happy. And I had this reoccurring dream for close to 10 years. Is this common, Roger?
Yeah, you know, people do have recurring dreams. And yours is kind of an interesting one because you have what you have on the left and what you have on the right. And I'll tell you, everyone's dream symbolism is uniquely their own. But for me, the left is the past, the unconscious, those sort of things. And things on the right are things that are conscious and the future. And then you have the middle way, the path that leads to a park. So having recurring dreams is not uncommon. It's just they normally stop whenever what issue they represent gets resolved in our waking life, then that recurring dream ceases.
Why do we remember some, Robert, and not others?
You know, I think the ones that we remember the most are the ones that have some emotional energy behind them. Those are the ones that really catch our attention, and they're probably an issue that on some deeper level we understand, but those are the ones we normally remember the best.
Let's go to Peter in Denver, Colorado. Welcome to the show. Hi, Peter. Go ahead, sir.
Thanks, George. First of all, I want to thank you. You allowed me to come on about a year ago to talk to people about I'm stage 5 with a 97% organ loss on my kidneys, and you've allowed me to ask for put out my information to see if I can get a donor. I haven't found a match, but I want to thank you very much. Mm-hmm. And I have a new website. If at the end of this you allow me to say it, I'll do it.
Sure, especially if it can help you. Absolutely.
But anyway, 2 years ago, I had this. I don't have vivid dreams very often, but just before I woke up, I felt this angel on my right shoulder in the dream. And she said to me, I wish we could be together always. And I said to her, I do too. And ever since I had that dream 2 years ago, I really had a lot of peace knowing that I had this angel sort of sitting on my shoulder. About a week and a half ago, I had my second vivid dream, and I was in a church, and this beautiful young lady, long black hair, was getting married, and she said, I'm having trouble going up to the altar. Can you help me, sir? And I said, sure. So I helped her up to the altar, and when I got to the altar, I noticed that there was no groom around, and I said, well, where's your groom? And she smiled and pointed at me. She said, you're my groom.
How about that?
It was a very, very vivid dream. And now I know what my angel looks like. And the second thing is that, you know, it just these two dreams put together by 2 years. And I want to get a kidney, and I believe a miracle's still out there. But if I don't, I know what my angel is going to look like because of those two vivid dreams.
Good. Are you still on dialysis, Peter?
I'm not eligible for that anymore. They give me about 8 to 12 weeks left, but I'm happy, George. And by the way, thank you for praying for me on Friday. I do feel I'm still going strong, and it's a miracle that I'm going
strong.
Great.
And what's your website to help you out?
It's jamesneedsakidney.weebly.com. Again, jamesneedsakidney.weebly, weebly.com. And now I'm praying not to get a kidney, but I'm praying for the person that's going to give me one. And thank you again, George. Thank you.
You're welcome. And what do you think of his angel dream, Robert?
You know, I think it's a beautiful dream because it kind of recognizes and shows us that at deeper levels, we understand at deeper levels, we are working with our larger self and understand the nature of things. So it's a beautiful set of dreams. And Peter, we wish you the best.
Absolutely. Hope he finds that kidney, too. That would be great. First time caller, Martha, Santa Cruz, California. Welcome to the show. Hi, Martha.
Well, Guess what? This isn't my first time. I don't know when it happened, but hello, George. How are you?
I'm fine.
Wonderful. It's an amazing program, and I was so touched by James, very much so. I will pray for him.
Thank you.
Your guest, I didn't get his name because I can't.
Robert Wagoner.
Really?
Yes.
Well, Robert, my dreams come true.
Oh, yeah?
Yes, they do.
All of them?
No, but I've had about 30 in my life, and they've saved lives.
Are they precognitive dreams?
Yes.
Interesting. So, Robert, she's had 30 precognitive dreams that have all happened.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing. There was a woman who wrote Dreams Are Magic Mirror, I think was the name of it, and she started out her book with an incredible story that she used to carpool with people. And they'd always meet in one parking lot in San Diego, and then they would head into town. And one day, the person who was driving said, I don't want us to meet in the parking lot. I want us to meet across the street. And so they all agreed to meet across the street. Well, that day, a plane, a light engine plane, fell from the sky and landed, well, crashed, exactly where they always used to meet before. But because this time they were across the street in the other parking lot where they were meeting, they all avoided a horrible fate. And so when you have those kind of experiences like Martha's had, it really shows us that at deeper levels we often know, and when we pay attention to our dreams and our intuition, we get that kind of confirmation.
Absolutely. Let's squeeze in a call or two. Paul in Boston. Go ahead, Paul.
Hi, George. What a show. Do you think the 357 would bring down Goliath if he comes back?
Who?
On your first part of the evening, you were talking about the Giants coming back.
Oh, the Giants.
And I said, you think a 357 would bring one down?
I'm not sure.
I had a dream. I smoked for 18 to 20 years before I stopped. 3 packs of Camels a day.
Oh, my God. I'm glad you stopped.
So am I. And one night, I woke up. I wasn't completely awake. I could smell a cigarette. I could taste it. I could tell you the brand was Pall Mall. And I swore the house was on fire because I had dropped a hot cigarette in the bed. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. I jumped up and I'm pulling the bed apart. My wife says, hey, what's wrong with you? Are you crazy? And the kids come down. And of course, I'm hollering, get out of the bed. Get out of the house. It's on fire.
That dream saved your life.
70 pounds, and it jumps on the bed because it's trying to get between my wife and me to protect my wife because I'm hollering. And I finally tipped the bed upside down so my wife would get up. And then the kids came and they woke me up, and there was no fire, of course.
Well, but that dream may have saved your life. What is it about dreams, Robert, like that have actual events, but they kind of like have this alarm system built in?
Yeah, it makes us wonder if we have some ability, some deeper ability to access information at a deeper level that our conscious mind isn't aware of. And when we get that, sometimes it can actually save our lives.
Absolutely.
So that's a wonderful story.
Robert, your two books, Lucid Dreaming, Gateway to the Inner Self, Lucid Dreaming, Plain and Simple. I found them on Amazon.com. Any other places?
You know, you can always find them at Barnes & Noble. Go to your local independent bookseller and ask for them, and they'll be happy to send them along.
Isn't it amazing how Amazon started as just a bookseller?
It really is.
And, now look at it.
And now you can also get these books on Audible as well. You can listen to them as
That's
you're
good.
Driving to work.
Super. Paul, Robert, thanks for being on the program. Appreciate it.
George, thank you for having me. It's wonderful to chat with you.
Hey, you take care of yourself. Richard Sheridan for the next couple of Fridays. While I'm on assignment, we'll be hitting the deck hard and fast when we come right back on Monday. Great programs for the next, our producers are just keep booking them. They just keep happening. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, Tim Bedall, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.